Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Lady Rage on Game with Geek Radio. And tonight we have Vance Major with us, who is an actor, director, and a producer. We also have our hosts with us, Roger and Bill. Good evening, everyone.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Good evening.
How's everybody
doing? How are we doing
today?
Doing pretty well. I'm pretty excited to have Vance on the show. Roger is too. Been following him on Facebook for some time. I know we've spoken quite a few times over the phone and over different comments and blogs and stuff like that. So, still excited to actually get you on the line and get some information out from people about your upcoming movies and some of your previous projects. So,
Before we get onto that, we're going to have to say a congratulations. Because Vance is
absolutely
father.
Yes.
Way
congrats.
To go!
Slow very
clap.
Cool.
Well, thank you.
When's the day?
February we should be giving birth and everything. And here in a couple of weeks we'll be finding out if it's a boy or a girl, and then we'll be announcing it that on Facebook and everything. Just to kind of get people. You know, like, this has been like a huge moment. Like, we've been waiting years for this, you know. So it's just to finally be a future father is very exciting. I'm tickled to death just thinking about little Tyke running around. You know, every time I'm eating dinner, I kind of look down the hallway and imagine the patter of feet just running down there, you know. So I'm really excited. But February is when the due date is. And it's just been a long time coming, man. But thank you. I appreciate it, brother.
That's great. Congratulations. And then
thank you very much.
So where do you want to start? You have a short video, a little 5-10 minute single you did recently, zombie thing. But you're mm-hmm. also working on.
Past couple months, I actually filmed a thing with the Valiant, an opening sequence for their upcoming episode, Ties That Bind. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, we screened that at SoonerCon, and I was on panel there, and that was quite an experience. Just seeing the different things we were doing on set, you know, some things that haven't been done in fan films before, and it was just really amazing. So I'm really fortunate to be part of Starship Valiant, and which is part of Starbase Studios. Another thing that we did while we were shooting The Ties That Bind, I did a little short called Pen Pals, and we had actually shot that. It was the last day of shooting Ties That Bind. It was about a 16-hour shift that we had done, acting and everything. And I had asked Michael before, I was like, hey, would you mind if we shot this? He said, sure, no problem. I'm sure he didn't expect us to stay 16 hours. But after the 16 hours, I reminded him, I said, hey, would this still be possible, or are we kind of done? And to show what a stand-up guy he is, like, he was like, no, let's do it. So I was able to knock that out, which was kind of a bridge between Starship Valiant and my film, Melbourne. Which we actually begin shooting Melbourne September 23rd through the 26th. And it's only going to be like 4-day shoot, but we've got the entire script ready, done. We've got people locked in place. We're ready to go. We've been planning for this for about a year and a half now. And, directors, cinematographers, CGI, makeup artists, actors. It's been a rough ride on some days. But that's just the nature of the beast. You know, you got to take the good with the bad. And then last month, I released a short called Dead Inside, which is my take on a zombie film. It actually was shot over a year ago when I got back from shooting something at Starbase Studios. But I think it was March when I shot that last year. And a couple of my friends had asked, you know, online, hey, let's do a zombie thing. Like, every one of us submit our own zombie videos. And that that kind of fell through. I was one of the few people that actually had, you know, shot anything for it. So I kind of just put it, you know, off to the side and let it go. And a couple of weeks ago, about a month and a half ago, I asked my editor, part of Dominion Media, if he would be interested in editing this thing that I hadn't really touched in a year. And much to my surprise, he was able to knock this out, you know, fairly quick. And there it is online, which is more of a character story than it is, you know, a zombie. But it takes place during the zombie apocalypse because, you know, the way I see it is if you have no budget – that's it's the only way to do a story, you know. Just work with what you got, you know.
And, you know, if you're lucky, you live somewhere up, you know, like Detroit, you can just roll down the street and be like, hey, look, it's the apocalypse. Let's just get out in front.
Right.
Yeah, full city blocks there that you can do something like that.
Right.
It's funny because it's true, man. It's sad, though.
It is very, very true. But I did want to actually ask you a couple, or not really too many questions here, but I did enjoy that Dead Inside that you had posted. You can find it on YouTube. You know, I did find it highly creepy and enjoyed that, like you did mention, it was a character piece, really. It is, you know, moaning and groaning to zombies. I don't want to give too much away, but there's a real long segment with there where you're speaking into the camera and kind of loading some feelings. What was kind of the basis of your writing in that?
Well,
was that all freestyle? Was that ad lib?
No, I actually had written a very small script, you know, and originally when I did it, you know, I didn't have much acting under my belt, so I thought, you know, the two hardest emotions to show is, when you cry on film, like that's something, you know, a lot of people can't do is just cry on camera. And then fear, like those are the two hardest emotions to actually express, you know, and be realistic in it, you know, without being over the top cheesy, you know.
Exactly.
So this was kind of my response to be like, well, if I ever put an acting reel together, this would be something that I could do, you know, and show people. So it did several things for me. So I decided to write a script, and I thought, you know, this guy, you know, in the apocalypse, you know, nobody's going to wake up and say, well, everything's fine and dandy, you know. You're going to be kind of psychologically scarred during some of the things you could not, you know, get away with or couldn't do, or relationships lost or whatnot. So I decided to put pen to paper and kind of write something that, you know, I felt was appropriate.
Right.
And, you know, that's one of the things that it was really hard to kind of dig down deep and get those emotions out. But it was something that, you know, I really just wanted to bring a rawness to it where it raised a lot of questions like, well, who is the lady per se? Who exactly, you know, who's he talking to? What exactly happened? And I intentionally didn't answer those questions because, you know, a lot of times in film, they give so much exposition where it just takes away from the story. And for me, I've always kind of felt that when you leave a lot of mystery there, you know, the audience can fill in the blanks. You don't have to, which is another reason why I had the zombies moaning in the background and everything. And you never actually saw anything. I mean, one, yeah, I had no budget. But two, you know, to me, I think less is more when you get the sense of what's going on, but you don't actually see it. Terrifying, because that's why kids are afraid of the dark.
The Jaws,
that's why.
Kind of the Jaws theme of, you know, you see the thing, you know, the big shark's down there, but you don't need it popping out every 10, 15 minutes with an action sequence.
Exactly.
Right.
What
you were talking about with not over exposition, I think that was one of the things I liked about the Mad Max movies, where you're just thrown into a fully realized world and there's no explanation for it, or very little. Anyway,
right?
There's no setup. There's no. I mean, it's just here it is. And then another one that's like that is Ridley Scott. he does that with his sci-fi stuff all the time.
Like,
well,
and
Prometheus that's, was just, here's all this stuff, and it's all cool, but there's no explanation for any of it. You can, so, in a lot of ways, I think that is neat. It's,
well, for me, I think the thing that I would compare it to would be like Alien versus like Alien Resurrection, where you saw, you know, in Alien, you don't really see the alien all that much, but when you do, it matters. You know, you have that sense of dread or that sense of, oh my God, what's going on? But then you get to like, you know, Aliens, you know, or Alien Resurrection, and you see aliens everywhere. Now I've always said that the Alien, the first one, you know, that's a scary movie. That's a horror film. But when you watch Aliens, you know, the sequel, you know, that's an action packed movie. That's not a horror movie. You know, it's two different genres.
Right.
You know, they just happen to be in the same universe. And that's kind of what I wanted to do here was kind of not scare anybody, but just make them uneasy. And you know, some people said it reminds them a lot of Blair Witch. Some people said Cloverfield. To me, it's like, to be even compared to some of those, you know, that's very flattering. Because, again, all I wanted to do was just kind of get the emotion across to the character, not necessarily the apocalypse, you know. But I'm really glad people enjoy it. It's received a lot of positive remarks on it. And, you know, I've gotten a couple of requests on if I'm going to do a sequel or anything, you know, a sequel short. and I'm kind of rolling it around, but I don't know if the right story came along. You know, I don't want to just put stories out there just because, you know, I want to be relevant,
right.
You know?
Right. So with, so you're involved with Valiant and Melbourne Star Trek properties. There's been, there were issues a while back between Paramount and the, fan base. Whatever happened with that? And how does that affect you?
Well, the thing with Melbourne is, you know, our show is a very character-driven piece. I think anything I'm involved in pretty much relies on character because that interests me, regardless of whether I'm acting or directing or producing. But Melbourne is a very character-driven piece. It just happens to have a Star Trek wrapper. When the guidelines first came out on the 23rd, you know, everybody was in a panic and a frenzy. You know, productions were getting canceled. You know, and I discussed with my partner Jeremy, well, hey, if we're not, you know, if we're not allowed to do it the way we want to, then why don't we just rewrite this and do, do our own sci-fi thing? To which we would have had to wait an extra year to build our own sets and go that route. But that's how. You know, that's how our story is. It doesn't necessarily need to rely on Star Trek, but, you know, this was always been our nod to Star Trek, our love for Star Trek, and that's why we wanted it set in this universe. But it wasn't a requirement by any means. But when John Van Kitters came on the 29th and kind of gave some clarification to the guidelines, you know, Jeremy and I realized, okay, we can work within this, and it doesn't really change our script much. But, you know, there were some things that we had to accommodate, like the you know, part one, part two, you know, you can only have them in 15-minute increments. You can't have more than one episode. You know, and the thing about it is, like, you have to tell self-contained stories. You know, so when Jeremy and I went back to the drawing board and we're like, look, we originally were going to tell six episodes, you know, that were cliffhangers at each episode. So we decided, well, we're not going to call them episodes. We're just going to call them, you know, films. And instead of saying, hey, this is Melbourne, our episode title is this, we're just going to call it, you know, what the episode is going to be called. Like our first film is going to be called Stormfront, but it's clearly with the characters of Melbourne. That's one way that we kind of work around that issue. And then, like I said, no cliffhangers, you know, you have to be self-contained with that story. But again, you know, what's self-contained? You know, to me, you know, every one of the TOS episodes, you know, the original series, those were self-contained stories, but you still had the overarching theme of exploration. And so we took that theme for what we were doing and said, okay, this is our overarching, you know, this is our backstory, and then this just happens to be the story within that universe that we're telling. So, it, you know, there are several ways to work around the guidelines and still stay within them. And the thing about it is, you know, with Van Kidders, when he got on there and was talking, you know, it's very apparent, like, they don't want to come after anybody and sue them, especially not the small fries like us. Like, I think my budget for Melbourne has been, I think, $2,500 or $2,700, something like that. Like, that's peanuts as opposed to, you know, some other productions out there. You know, it would cost more in legal fees for them to come after us. They would simply send you a cease and desist letter and say, hey, cut it out.
$2,500 doesn't even pay 1 hour of their lawyer bills.
That's exactly it. But you had people fanatically going crazy. In fact, some of the productions were taking their films off of YouTube because they thought they were going to get sued. And it was the day before I went to SoonerCon. I got off work, I think, at 3 in the morning, and I was supposed to leave here at 7 to go to Oklahoma City. And I just started downloading, you know, Star Trek fan films because I thought if they're going to get this, you know, crazy, then I want them because I want to watch them, you know.
Right.
But the thing about it is, like, you know, it's not a big deal, and people like to panic for no reason. People like to have an opinion before they know all the facts. And for Jeremy and myself, we sat back and we were like, well, we've got this plan to tell this story in our own universe, but we'll wait till after clarification. Once clarification came, it's like, okay, it's not as bad as the guidelines seem or as, you know, online people make it out to be. So, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like, I mean, look at Pen Pals. That's what, I think, 1 minute and 7 seconds. And it tells a pretty, you know, it tells kind of a funny story while getting the point across that he's talking to his friend, but he just got caught on the bridge. You know, you can work within a guideline, but people want to do things their way. And sadly, that's just not the case anymore, you know, but it's certainly workable. You just have to have the right story and the right frame of mind. You know, any good filmmaker mm-hmm. can make something work, you know. My opinion, of course.
Well, Bill, you're a filmmaker. I don't do films. I just talk about other people's projects.
Right. I kind of understand exactly where he's kind of coming from, you know, when it comes to sometimes knee-jerk reactions from other people and having opinions on things before getting all the facts straight. And even when creating, too, when you were talking about how, you know, it's in a Star Trek wrapper, but it's not contained to just that. These are the themes, this is the story that we want to tell, these are the characters that we want to portray.
Right.
That's the real special thing about the filmmaking. You know, I have several different little things that I've kind of written, different scenes, just, you know, it's written one specific way right now, but we could always maybe adopt that into another film at another point, be like, oh, you know, this character really feels the same way over here, so we can be able to translate those things over there. It's not always restricted to just exactly one set of parameters.
The thing. Like, you know, some of the story elements that, you know, him and I came up with, you know, when we were converting everything over, you know, and then, you know, before we were waiting to see, you know, we just wanted to have everything lined up just in case. But, you know, some of the story elements that we came up with, I actually preferred those more than what we're actually doing for Melbourne, you know. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, that knee-jerk reaction, it's, you know, everybody, they want to be, you know, they want to get mad, they want to get angry. Mm-hmm. And I'll admit, you know, when the guidelines first came out, you know, that put us at like 3 months away from shooting. And then to have that bombshell dropped where it seems like, you know, the world's falling apart, at least that was the internet reaction. You know, But, you know, anyone that's seen my den, you know, they see all the Star Trek stuff I have. You know, it's like I couldn't walk into my den without getting sick at looking at all the action figures or the posters or whatnot. Like, I got so sick of it because I'm like, you know, what's the point? You know, and when you get burned out of something you love, that's just a terrible way to be. And I don't know if like, I don't know if that was CBS's intention or not, but I think that got some terrible, backlash. You know, and some people some people have said, well, you know, it's just a couple of fans; they're not really going to care. You know, and who are they anyway? You know, but you know, you got to realize that those fans now, those small number of fans, you know, are about the same as what, you know, they had to start the letter campaign for Star Trek to keep it on the air. You know, it's like never underestimate
right.
the fan base, you know, but when you start, when it seems like you're pissing on the fans, you know, you just can't do that. And so I don't know if that was their intention or not. I don't think so. But I really don't think they would have handled it that way if they knew what backlash they were going to get.
I think that media companies in general, some of them do not understand the effects, the second and third order effects of their actions when they do something, where they change a character, you know, whether it's something legal like what we're talking about, or they change a beloved character or recast something in a certain way, and you know, how fast that spreads. Because it's not just,
right.
our fan base in the United States. It reaches the planet fairly quickly. And the internet being what it is, has a tendency to make things grander than what they are. You know, some companies, though, are really good at it, like Marvel. Slash Disney.
Some companies really spend some time and sit down and focus on that type of thing and what potential changes in the fan base could be based on what those actions are. I think where a lot of companies make the mistakes is that they're looking at one thing, and that's called the bottom line.
Well,
you know, there's an hour sign there and a mouth.
Warner Brothers.
Sorry.
Well,
you could go that way, but and they fail one day.
Fantastic
Four. Yeah, Fox has had their fair share of flops too, and Disney has too. Let's not forget that. But I don't know. But I'm not trying to bash any type of production or anybody's contributions to film. But you know, some people, especially businessmen, they get a character, they get involved with these projects sometimes, and they forget about the fans, like Vance or us or the other millions around the world because of the internet, that are able to give a reaction very quickly. You see a big drop-off.
Well, and that's exactly it. You know, the thing about it is, like, the guidelines, when you read them, you know, of course, you know, John Vankitters, you know, read them. Of course, he knew about them, proved them, whatever. But when you actually read them, like, it sounds very much like a lawyer – a lawyer did this, not somebody that was actually trying to appease the fans. Like, this was, I honestly feel that the guidelines were written for one specific thing, and then backlash hit, and they're like, oh shoot, what do we got to do to save face? You know, and then when Vankitters got on, I was like, no, guys, I'm just like you. This is just, let me clarify here, and for that, you know, that really put a lot of people at ease. But by that point, the damage had been done for so many films, you know, films that even now you try to do a GoFundMe, nobody wants to put out for that. You know, again, my budget is $2,700. It's harder than heck to, get funded for some of these things that you want to do. You know, a lot of people don't want to help you out, you know, even though you are, you know, your heart's in the right place, you know, this, you know, the guidelines and, you know, the reason for them, you know, it scared a lot of people. And I can't necessarily blame them. It's just, you know, it is what it is. I don't like them, but it is what it is, you know. I think if they knew what was going to happen, they would have done it differently, though. I don't think they would have done it this way.
It was probably a bunch of guys sitting in the boardroom, and they looked at it as a, we need to define this in some way to protect our IP.
And that was probably
the sum total of the conversation. You know, and then they went out.
Oh yeah. And for those, you know, those people, you know, who sit there and they want to, you know, there's two ways to look at it. One, you can look at it from the aspect of, no, Star Trek belongs to the fans, and you shouldn't do this to them, and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, that's true to a point, but flip side of the coin, you know, you don't go over to someone's house and then invite yourself over for dinner and then complain about what they're serving. And that's the same thing here. You know, it's like,
Good analogy. I said good analogy.
Oh, right on. Thank you. But, you know, that's the same thing here. It's like it's their property. And even though I was pissed off at, you know, hey, we may not be able to do Melbourne, or, you know, hey, we're so close to filming this thing and we've gone through so many obstacles, and it really, like, you know, what little hair I had left I pulled out. you know, it's just frustrating. And, you know, that's why I was so glad when Van Kitters did the, you know, the clarification, because it's like, okay, hey, this guy's on our side. You know, they don't want to sue anybody as long as we play, you know, as long as our intentions are good, which has always been what, you know, if you listen to the interview I did for the Promenadicon on Comic Pop last year, like I said the same exact thing. If you try to make a profit, you know, don't. You know, we're not in this for a profit. We're in it because we're fans. You know, and this was
right.
October. Like, that's always been Starbase's studio stance, is we're not here for a profit. We're here for the fans. And, you know, it's just, it's one of those things where it's sad. It's sad to see so many productions stay folded instead of saying, yeah, we're going to give this a shot. You know, it's disheartening, which is one more reason why we're desperately, you know, wanting to get Melbourne out there, because we want to show them, hey, you can still follow the guidelines and have an interesting story.
Right.
You know, because it can be done. You know, someone said, yeah, mm-hmm. it's not impossible, you know, not at all. But,
you know, there's rule changes all the time in games, you know, professional gaming, business, entertainment. You know, if you're a fan and you want to get a film done, you know, it's good that you kept your heart there, kept your, you know, whatever hair is still left that you didn't pull out, you know, that you're able to still get that media out there for them and be maybe even a trendsetter. I'm saying, hey, you know what? You can still produce some well-made stories, even within these guidelines.
Right. Well, the thing, like, we had one time we had, and this was last year, we had a group of people that came from, I want to say Topeka, maybe, or around that area, like somewhere. Like, they came from somewhere in Kansas, but they went down to Oklahoma City, and they wanted to look around the bridge, and, of course, you know, we allowed it. But then they're like, hey, could we shoot like just a 2-minute clip just for ourselves? And, you know, of course, you know, Scott Johnson, Richard Wells, you know, people at Starbase Studios, you know, we're like, sure, go ahead. You know, go ahead, do what you do. You know, it's what the studio's here for, is to shoot films. So, you know, they shot, you know, their segments and whatnot, you know, and of course, you know, they're wearing the Enterprise patch, and, you know, they're not particularly in the right uniform or whatever, you know, but on their way home, they completely had this thing edited to where it was kind of part of the doomsday machine type deal. You know, and it was just fun for themselves.
Hmm.
But to me, I'm like, you know, they spent, what, 3 hours, 4 hours, and they already had a video that was ready to go on YouTube if they wanted. You know, that's the thing where,
right.
Like, anyone with a camera, you know, and a YouTube account can do what they want to do. For me, I just want to make a film for my friend. Like, I don't care if, you know, it gets noticed or anything. Like, I want a movie that I could say, hey, Roger, take a look at this. Or, hey, Bill, take a look at this. Or, hey, lady, take a look at this. Like, I just want to share it with my friends and be like, that's what I do. That's what I like. You know, not, hey, you know, let me build a career on this. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I want to explore that a little bit more. But first, we have to acknowledge some of the people that helped to get the word out about this radio podcast. We have the extraordinary journey of a black nerd and heroes and villain crap, the Nerds News Network, Lady Venom's Lair, Geeks, Girls, and Games, Geeking Fun, Fantasy Gaming Art, Game Share Play. You can find us all at Gamers Geek Radio on Facebook, Gamers Geek Radio on Twitter, Gamers Geek Radio on Instagram. And that is all Vance to you. And, of course, we have Vance's Promenade. It's been around for how long?
Almost 6 years now. Just about. And in February, it'll be 6 years. So, yeah, like 5.5 years.
Cool.
And so we're talking about, you were talking about the really kind of hit on that where we are now in terms of technology, the ability to distribute content, and just using mm-hmm. that in the most generic sense, where you can take, you're not, shooting Spielbergian epics here, but you can take cell phones and iPads or the tablet of your choice, and shoot and edit video and have it uploaded in the same day with minimal equipment.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
Since you two are the filmmakers here,
how
do you see that expanded? It's only getting better. Some of the new tablets coming down, a lot of the new film editing, audio software coming out is all being done, so it can be used on a tablet, can be used on a phone. How do you guys see that, one, being used at the, I'm air quoting here, which is really great for radio, amateur level, kind of like at the pro, your big budget boys doing that?
Go ahead, Bill.
I see it as a positive thing for the most part. There's always going to be some negative drawbacks to that, but whenever somebody...
Check 1, 2, 3. Anyone hear me?
I'm here. You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you, brother.
Hello.
Okay. I hear you too, Roger.
Did we drop off the air?
All right. No, I don't think so. But, I think it's a good thing for the most part. Whatever somebody's intentions are, whether that's to start a career or just enjoy making some story, whether that's a short or a longer feature, if they can get that much kind of content put together, whatever makes them want to make some type of film, I think the easier accessibility to it might actually bring out some of those, special gems that are out there that, some great writers, some great actors, producers and cinematographers. We hear you, Roger. You there? Can you hear us at all?
Hey, Roger.
Hey, bud.
Can you hear Bill and me?
Yeah, can you hear us?
Yeah, we can hear you, brother.
Oh, okay. Well, I know you can hear me. Just making sure Roger's doing all right. But I don't know. How do you feel, Vance, about the just accessibility of media and film being so, lower cost than it's ever been, really?
Well, the thing about it is, I honestly believe the Hollywood sign is going to be a monument here in the next 50 years. If you go back, you go back 50 years ago, Hollywood was the only place to get made a star. Whereas now, like I said earlier, anyone with a cell phone and a YouTube channel can, become a star. Look at the overly attached girlfriend, which I watched. I watched like 5 of those videos today, and I couldn't stop laughing, but I mean, that's the world we live in, where we create our own entertainment. And to me, that's very exciting.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you, brother.
You doing good?
I could not hear any of you. It was utter silence. And I'm like, hello, is anyone there?
No, we're good, man. We're good.
We're good, man.
But
you guys hear the question I had posed after I did all the...
We did.
What? What was
we're still kind of touching on that here.
Okay, go for it. Sorry.
I mean, take a look at, Dead Inside. That was something I had with just my cell phone. I shot it all in one night. I used an electronic candle to be my quote unquote candle for the film.
Right.
I used what I had available to me. I spent no money on it. A year later I had a friend edit it. And I think I added 2 scenes, the one where I'm walking up to the house and the one where, he's running across the thing.
Right.
Me being a tubby guy, it's more of a waddle instead of a run, but, it's like, take that. That was done on no budget. I put it out there and it entertained people for 6 minutes, and again, that's not Hollywood level, like, I think what Roger said earlier, Spielberg level, quality, but again, you know, we're entertaining ourselves. One of my favorite things on YouTube is called the Joker Blogs. Now that, awesome stuff. And I haven't seen anything like that since Heath Ledger Joker. Certainly nothing since then has impressed me from Warner Brothers, but the Joker Blogs have completely entertained me. And I think, you know, again, you know, people who have a desire and, you know, the heart, you know, they get other people that get together, you know, with the age of the internet, that's not hard to do. I think Hollywood in 50 years is going to be a monument. I really do. So,
yeah.
It's a good time.
The studios are, and I got to say, Disney and by extension Marvel are kind of getting ahead of the curve on this, is when they have an IP, like their comic book series, they're attacking everything. They've got a regular TV series. They're actually probably going to need another one to follow. They have their Netflix series, which are utterly amazing. That is probably the best 13-hour movies in existence. And then they have their cinematic universe, which is just a license to print money for them. They're hitting all the, you know, obviously the print and everything else. They're hitting all the mediums. I think everybody else seems to be playing catch up with them.
Well, that's the thing. Like a lot of people in Trek fandom are kind of drawn, you know, it's kind of, I would say probably 40-60 on the new Star Trek, you know, Star Trek Discovery, because it's, you know, the first episode will be on CBS, but then after that you have to subscribe to CBS All Access. Now, for someone like me, I look at that and I'm like, well, there's nothing else on your channel that I particularly want, so why would I spend that much? When I look at what Marvel's doing with Daredevil and Jessica Jones and now coming up Luke Cage, you know, that is on Netflix. Why don't you just put it there and entertain us instead of making us buy your channel? To me, it feels like a money grab. And I've said from the beginning, way before you know, any of this stuff, you know, went down on people getting mad and whatnot. I have no interest in buying that. If that means I never see it, then I have a bunch of fan films that I can watch online and be just as happy. You know, and I'm not the only one that feels that way. And again, it boils down to, you know, people say, well, you're not the majority of people. You're right. But again, those people who wrote the letters for the campaign to keep Star Trek on the air, they weren't the majority either, but they got enough attention. And that's the same thing here. It's just their heart. You know, they're in it for the money, it feels. And I want Star Trek, but I don't want to feel like you're just not trying to please the fans.
Star Trek. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's CBS is using an old business model in a, you know, it's like with the record companies. They're dead, basically. They just haven't figured it out yet. Regular broadcast stations are kind of going that way, too. They're doing things like what you described, where they're trying to do the Netflix model, but you can't. You're not Netflix. You're not HBO. You don't have a game.
But they're trying to limit it to themselves, exactly, yeah.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, they have for All Access, you know, it's like $6, I think, for the regular, which will have commercials or whatever, 30-second commercials, I think. And then you can pay $10 and get it with no commercials. So my thing is, like, you know, Hulu can get away with that because there's stuff on Hulu that I actually want to watch. But, you know, I cannot name 5 shows on CBS that I want to watch. It's not that interesting. Now, I had heard a while ago that they were considering taking Star Trek off of Netflix and putting it on All Access so you could only access it there, to which my mentality was, that would be the biggest shot in the foot that you could do, because most of the Star Trek fans have the DVDs already, and it comes across, it comes on TV enough as it is. Like, to do that would definitely show the fans we're only in it for the money. I don't think that's what they're doing now. Hopefully that's not, because that's honestly the worst thing to do. You know, it is severely outdated. And again, you know, instead of working with Netflix on something to produce a show, you know, they're trying to get it for themselves. And I don't like it, because there's nothing, you know, a couple people are coming on board that have done Star Trek before, but realize the last time we had Star Trek on the air, it was 15 years ago. I don't think those people were necessarily working on Star Trek back then. So they haven't shown me anything. And then I saw that butt ugly ship, and I'm like, oh, good God. And the thing that's scary about that is they've said, well, the ship can change before we actually make the first episode. And so my question is, why would you release a teaser of a ship that is not necessarily the final version of your ship? Like, to me, it's just very stupid.
Yeah.
It's just like at the end of Star Trek Beyond, which I love that movie.
Oh,
but at the end of it, you see the new Enterprise A, and you don't get a very good shot at it. And they said, oh, it's because we want to continue evolving it, so we didn't want to put the final model up there and give everyone a good shot. And my thing is, like, why would you do that? Like, this should be the money shot.
That?
Yeah. Right. So to me, it just seems like...
You don't want to walk in that cliffhanger, you know?
Like, right?
Yeah.
What, was your $100 million budget just not quite big enough? You know?
Yeah, like, and again, like, what little I saw of the ship, like, it looked like the pylons were going to fall off, you know, just the way they were, because it was like, you know, the warp nacelles, they go up, and then the pylons are just hanging off. So it feels like if they go into warp, those pylons are falling off, you know. So I just, it's a very ugly ship, but to me it says, if you can't give a full-blown, hey, here's a poster of the new ship, then you're not confident in your product.
Right.
You know, it's like with Melbourne last year. When I put the ship out, I was like, this is what we're doing. You know, I was confident in what we were doing and how we were going forward. You know, I've gotten some ridicule saying how the, you know, the turrets on the saucer section look like JJ, you know, phasers, which my only response to that is wait and see the episode. You'll find out that that's not what it is per se. It's just you're looking at things from one aspect, not my aspect. But again, you know, I put it out there knowing I'd get some backlash, but I was very confident in my product. And it's the same, you know, they don't have that mentality, you know, with at the end of Star Trek Beyond with the Enterprise A and then releasing this ship of the Discovery. If that's not necessarily the final version of your ship, why the hell are you showing it to me?
Right.
You know, I don't know what they're thinking. And it makes it very confusing to be a fan and support a product. I mean, look at Game of Thrones. They're a thing that, you know, they're a show that is unapologetically, you know, what it is.
They do what they want to do.
Like it,
right.
Exactly. You like it or you don't.
And even if you don't like it, you're still going to watch because they said, we are doing this. This is what happened. Take it or leave
it. Yeah.
You're not going to leave it because they were with that confidence to have to go, you know, with these cliffhangers that some of these shows do, or for instance, you know, talking about the design of these ships, it goes back to that, you know, guy sitting in a room looking at one thing at the bottom, I'm worried about that, saying, well, if we do this, is there any potential of loss, you know? And that's not the hard to have when doing
something
like that.
And something else, too, you guys touched on with Netflix, the Netflix model has changed how really a television series is done. Because, and I sort of joked about it, but it's true. It's definitely true for the Marvel series and some of the other Netflix series. Those are 13, 14-hour movies. So they write it as one giant bit. It's not like regular television where that's why you see in the season stuff changes, it alters, it gets better, things move, because they're constantly moving that, because they're filming it as you're going. And whereas Netflix, they film it as one giant thing. They write the whole bit. And
HBO does that too. You know,
HBO does the same thing.
With writing their shows, is they write the whole season out, and they say, here we go, you know, filming starts now. And they might do some tweaks along the way, because you never, you know, unexpected things do happen.
Well,
but
you're going to do that because you're going to shoot something. It looks good on paper, and then you shoot it, and you're like,
For the most part, these things are all written and pre-production wise done before even getting the filming. Where with traditional network television,
Jesus. It took them
They're two months behind the actual episode's broadcast.
Yeah.
You know,
it took them
You're writing two months behind.
You know?
Oh, yeah,
just
absolutely.
Just that white sequence alone took them weeks.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was worth it, though. Oh, my God.
That's going to be a special piece in television history. I believe that. Yeah. In 20 years,
you know,
we'll still be talking about it.
I'll tell you what, though. My heart will always be with, right now, well, I'm waiting for Luke Cage. Both seasons of Daredevil. When I saw the Punisher, this season's Punisher, I was like, take my money, Netflix. You could double your price.
Right.
I'll pay it. Give me all the Frank Castle.
Well,
and that's like...
I think they have some of that coming for you. Don't worry.
Please give it to me. He's gonna, you know, he's gonna show up too, and you just wreck house. I mean, that dude is, it was so good.
Well, it's like they were very smart, you know, in the Daredevil, especially the first season. Now, I enjoyed the second season really, you know, a lot, but the first season, like, you go through all the episodes until the last one, and he's not even in the Daredevil costume. So you care about Matt Murdock's character, not Daredevil. You don't give a shit about Daredevil. You care about Matt Murdock first.
The person.
You know? Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, that's what it does right, where, you know, a lot of these films, you know, they don't – You know, the studio walks
What's the Batman costume going to look like?
Right? You know,
Excuse me, gentlemen.
Well, that's...
What's
that?
We have a call
from Hollywood.
Okay, go ahead.
Area code
620,
you're on the air.
Yes. Is this Gamers Geek Radio? This is. Yes, sir. Ah, this is from Vance. I don't know.
Well,
I've been talking with Captain Cooper. And this is Captain Stapleton. See if he might see who that is.
What's up, Richard? How are we doing, man?
Not much, guy. How you going?
Finer than frog hair, my friend. He'll be playing a captain on Melbourne. Captain Stapleton is who his character is going to be playing. Richard Brookman. This is the announcer. The interviewer from Comic Pop too. By the way, good guy.
Awesome.
Very cool.
How are you doing? How's Kansas?
Doing great, as Vance can tell. Of course, I'm doing a lot better than Vance. He's kind of been down in the back for a while.
Yeah, a little bit, but it's getting better, man. It's getting better.
We don't even get to see him down there hardly at all.
What's that?
We don't even hardly get to see him down there at all.
Yeah, we'll get you back up here, though. It'll be all good, man. Trust me, and Lenny are working on some projects that we'll have you back up here, brother. So we'll have you back up.
Well, I just wanted to give a shout out to Vance and let everybody know that, you know, he's been doing this pretty much on his own. He's been doing a lot of stuff that behind the scenes, he and Jeremy, and now he's got Michael Sylvester kind of playing a role that he wasn't expected to be playing. Not just a captain, but also probably a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff that he wasn't preparing for. So congratulations on getting this started and having all this going forward for you, Vance.
Well, thank you, man. I really appreciate it. You're talking about the changes to production. We had Michael Sylvester, who was originally going to play Admiral Vandenbos, but then the captain... who we had originally for the Melbourne, he had to step back from the project. And so we were kind of left in a position of, oh, shoot, what do we do? but Michael Sylvester, you know, he went for the role and, you know, he's one of the greatest guys you'll ever meet. And he's Michael Sylvester, part of Sylvester Photography. I met him originally a little bit before the last year's Promenadicon, and which is also where I met Richard. But it was one of those things where, you know, he went for the part and we felt, you know, he knows basically the whole script because he fell in love with it, you know, when I sent it to him originally. But he's been one of the biggest helps getting this production, keeping it on track. And, you know, but that's the nature of the beast. You know, things happen at the last minute that you're just like, oh, shoot. You know, and at any time your production can torpedo itself, you know. So that's one reason why, you know, everybody has a million ideas, but, you know, films never get made, you know. It's because, you know, stuff like that happens. So, you know, we're very fortunate to have a lot of good people, both in front of and behind the camera, that are with this project, you know. And, you know, one of those people is Richard here. So
how is it herding cats between multiple states and to get all of this done?
What's that now?
I said it sounds a little like you're herding cats because you're working out of different states and stuff.
Well, it's one of those things where it's, you know, when I shot Ties the Bind last year, or well, not last year, but a couple months ago, I had to take down two things that we're going to use as cargo containers. Which mm-hmm. nobody in the 23rd century has ever seen, you know, a cargo bay or a cargo container from the 23rd century. So, you know, I had to improvise, you know. So when I went down there to film that, you know, I took those down there and then I left them at the studio. So then when they go down on the 23rd of this month to go film, they'll have it there. You know, you really have to plan ahead and you've got to think three steps ahead. So when stuff comes up that you're not prepared for, you know, you can at least adapt to it as best possible, you know, and there's always going to be something that you haven't planned for in production. A lot of people mm-hmm. think, well, I thought this out and I've got a great script. Well, a great script is a very small part of a production. You have to be
right.
adaptable to things. When people aren't flexible to the environment that they're in, it's not going to get made. So it's difficult sometimes, but you have to plan ahead. And you really have to work on, you know, communication is a big thing, you know. I can't stress that enough, you know, and even I fail at that, you know, and I'm giving it 110% and even I still fail at that, you know, so, you know, you just got to adapt, you know, so.
Yep. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about recently, just, we're trying, I think I sent you over the script, Dan, just kind of have you, give me some input whenever you get a moment. But
okay.
I got a fan film that, you know, that I want to be able to get out there by Halloween. I don't want to give away too much. But, you know, location shoot, we had a place solidified, ready to rock and roll. I mean, we're ready to start filming here soon. And last second, some insurance things kind of popped up that we didn't think about. So we had to kind of last second kind of find another place to go, you know, and that kind of messed with the script a little bit, but, you know, adaptability is definitely a key to that.
Well, and that's the thing, like the script Jeremy and I first came up with for Melbourne, because we had spent 3 months just on character development and where we wanted to go throughout
right.
the course of the 6 films that we were going to shoot. But we, you know, I can tell you how it's going to end right now, and I can tell you where every character arc is going to go. But the thing
right.
about it is, At any given year, we could have one of the actors say, hey, I lost my job, I'm not coming. Ah, shoot, well, that ruins, dang it, what are we going to do? But that is the nature of the beast, you know.
Yep.
You know, like with you guys, you know, with the insurance thing, you know, you if you can't adapt to stuff, then you really shouldn't even try to filmmake, you know.
Exactly.
Because it's those things happen all the time, you know.
If you're depending on just one thing, one actor, one location, one camera, then you know, you're probably gonna find yourself in a world of hurt at some point.
Right, and the biggest thing for film would be sound. You know, a lot of people
right.
are very forgiving of you know, cheap effects or somewhat campy acting,
yeah.
but if your sound is terrible, you're gonna lose an audience.
Yeah, they can't hear you.
Sit
your effects right there.
Or
agreed.
There's something in the background. You know, you've got you know, you're supposed to be, you know, somewhere in ancient Egypt, and you hear a plane going overhead.
Right. Well, it's like the thing is, like.
Go ahead, bro.
Well, I was going to say, with the sound, that kind of helped with us. We were down there in April helping Rene Perez out of California. He's the director of Playing with Dolls, Bloodlust. He went to Oklahoma City to do a Star Trek short. And we went down there to help him out as a podcast, and we were fanning the smoke, and he was hoping it would be as quiet as could be, but lo and behold, you know, it's not. He's going to have to go back in and redo the sound on that part. And so that's a process, even with not just people that are doing it for fun, but even the professionals, they have to go around and work out all these kinks that develop. And, you know,
well, that's
a long day. We were there, we got up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and we were hitting the sack at 1 o'clock at night, sometimes 2.
Yeah.
So it's a long day, so it's something you got to love to do.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing that a lot of people don't realize. You know, when they sit there and watch the fan films, they're like, oh, the acting sucks in this. Oh, man, they don't have good effects. Oh, man, you know. And the thing about it is, like, I salute anyone that makes a fan film, like, even if it's good or bad. When Jeremy and I first started doing this, you know, we watched, you know, hundreds of fan films because you have to see the good and the bad, and you have to see the bad and the good, you know, to know exactly what you're doing and what you're looking for. But, you know, the thing about it is, you know, when I went down there to shoot a Valiant slash Ajax crossover, which may or may not ever see the light of day, you know, I drove through, you know, an ice storm to get there. We shot, you know, I was up from 11 o'clock on Friday. I got off work at 3. Then I drove to the studio, got there by 7, and then we were filming by 8, and we filmed all day. I didn't get to bed till, like, I think it was, like, 10 o'clock that night. So, you know, I had been up for, like, 36 hours just... You know, I mean, I was just, it was so tiring, you know, by the time I actually got to sleep, you know, and the thing about it is, like, you know, people could say, oh, Vance can't act. Nah, you're probably right. There's people better than me, I'm sure. But the thing about it is I never got paid for it. You know, I drove, my own gas was used to get there. You know, I did it because I wanted to, because I was passionate. And that's, anyone that makes a fan film or a film in general, you know, tip of my hat to you. You know, you're trying to do something different. You're trying to get out there. And I love people's passion, you know, good or bad. That's awesome.
And almost 99% of the time, like you said, it's their own gas, their own money, you know, in order to get things done, whether it's the actors, people on the crew, the directors, you know, it comes out of your own wallet at the end of the day. And not all of us have last name Rockefeller. So, you know.
Well, and that was
to even put out $100 sometimes into something is a chunk of change, you know.
Well, and that's the thing, like, the hotel I stayed at when I was there that first time, like, there was a running joke on the set the next day because, you know, when I got to my hotel, there was, like, dry blood stains on the carpet. You know, I could hear knocking on the, you know, in the walls. Like, it, you know, there was claw marks on the dresser where it looked like someone was just fighting for dear life. And I'm like, good God, is this American Horror Story?
Oh,
what is this? You know, but, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like, you never know what you're going to get, but you're always going to have some interesting stories, you know? And you just got to make the, you just got to make the best of it and have the, as good a time as you can, you know, like, in our studio, there's no AC, there's no heater. So when we were shooting that first time, you know, when we were done doing our parts, we'd all go run over to the space heater, you know, just to try to keep warm. But that brings you together as friends because you're going through the wild together, you know, and that's what fan films are all about. It's about the passion and sharing with other friends and making friends. That's kind of what Star Trek is in general, is just a bunch of people that get together for a common goal. And, like, I love the fan film industry. And even when I do leave it, because, you know, I do plan to one day, when I do leave it, like, I will have been glad that I did the experience because I've met some great people, you know. But it's definitely something, man.
All right. You know what? You're right. Hold on. We got to wrap it up because I just got a message. We're about up.
Okay. But I wanted to say real quick thing, then I'll ring off. If you can make it to Promenautica, guys, go down there in Oklahoma City, support Vance. I don't know how far away you are, but it's a fun time, fun day. Meet a lot of friends. Vance, you take care. You guys keep going on.
All right, you take care. Have a good night, man.
Bye-bye.
Have a good night, man.
You too. Right. And you guys hit it up. Like, they were, you know, a lot of people, they love to criticize, but you know what? For all the internet film experts, if you think it's so easy, you go right ahead and you do it yourself.
Right.
Well, you try it and let me know how that works out.
Well, but that's exactly it.
Yeah. So real quick, we'll give another thanks to our sponsors, as it were.
Yep.
The Extraordinary Journey of a Black Nerd, Heroes and Villains and Crap, The Nerd News Network, Lady Venom's Lair, Geeks, Girls, and Games, Gaming Fun, Fantasy Gaming Art, Game Share Play. These can all be found on the Facebooks at Gamers Geek Radio, Twitter, Gamers_Geeks_Radio, and Instagram at Gamers_Geek_Radio. And also from the Promenade, Vance who? Vance, can you give us some info on Promenadicon that's coming up?
Yeah, the Promenadicon is it's basically, you know, for everyone that's in the Promenade, which is a geek group on Facebook, look us up. But for anyone that's part of the Promenade or anyone that's not part of the Promenade, doesn't really matter. We invite you to come down to Starbase Studios, which is in Oklahoma City. Look us up on Google or Facebook. But it's basically just a coming together of the geeks. Doesn't matter what culture you're from. You know, fan base doesn't matter. But we invite you to come take a look at our sets and, you know, take a picture in Captain Kirk's chair and, you know, see Sick Bay, see the transporter room, and if we have it built up at the time, the briefing room. It's just a time to come together, and also there'll be some booths where we'll have the fan films, you know, from like Starship Valiant, Starship Ajax, Dreadnought Dominion, you know, some people there that, you know, are in the fan films that you can come meet and talk to them. And just, you know, it's free. I'll never charge. It's just a bunch of geeks getting together having a good time. So if anybody wants to come make that trip, it's on October 22nd from 10 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon Central Time. Come join us because we'd love to have you and, you know, take plenty of pictures because it's a fun time. So
very cool.
All right. And I'm Roger.
I'm Bill.
There's Vance?
I'm Vance. I'm Vance.
All right, Vance. Yeah, this is so much easier. We're not actually in the same room together. Normally, if you're doing normal radio, you're all in the studio with each other. It makes it easier. All right, guys. Right. Hey, hope to catch you next week. And just so everybody knows, on the 25th of September, we are going to be interviewing the voice of Batu from Ghost in the Shell and Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex. See you then.
Mm-hmm.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Are we out?